Hey, health junkies. It's time for The Health Fix. Join your host, Dr. Janine Krause, as she gives you a dose of what you need to know and do right now to take control of your health from the inside out, to rebel against aging, look damn good, fight stress, and laugh every day.
Hey there, health junkies. Welcome to another episode of The Health Fix. I'm your host, Dr. Janine Krause, and today's episode is all about not hating on wheat for your gut issues, skin rashes, puffy eyes, and weight gain. And the reason I really wanted to do this podcast is because I feel like wheat gets a really bad rap, and I feel like a lot of people are looking at it as being, oh, it's trendy to stop eating gluten, so I'm not going to do it because I'm not going to be trendy and blah, 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 whatever it may be. Also, I find that a lot of people are confused because we're told organic whole grains are better. Don't eat the refined grains. Then we are told, no, sprouted grains are better. Wait, no, just avoid all grains. And so it's kind of one of these things where I think a lot of us are confused. And I find this in my practice often that for all intents and purposes, most of my patients don't really know what to believe or which direction to go in. And a lot of us are confused as to what gluten is and what it really does to our body. And it's something that I really think is important to understand because I don't think it's necessarily the wheat that's the issue. I think it's what we consume with the wheat, but I think it's also what's done to the wheat to harvest it for maximum yield. So today I'm going to go into all of the different things that affect wheat and what I get from my patients in terms of questions and what I do with supposed wheat sensitivities. So first things first, we've got to go into why might we have all these problems with wheat? I don't think it's necessarily that we can't break down the grain because wheat's been around for thousands of years. In fact, I believe it was something like 17,000 years is what the Grain Council quoted as being the amount of time that we've been using wheat. And we've even got we've got data that says wheat originated in the cradle of civilization near what we call Iraq currently. And we have dating back to 8,800 BC that we've been using wheat. Now, of course, we've manipulated wheat. We've hybridized it, meaning we've taken different types of wheat strains and mixed them together to get a better yield and get a hardier crop and get crops that'll grow in northern Montana compared to crops that'll grow in southern Oregon. So, of course, we've manipulated it because, we have to do that to figure out ways that we can grow these grains and make them sustainable for us. However, in all of this hybridization and figuring out how to grow wheat more effectively, I think we've done some damage. In particular, we didn't start using Roundup, so that's glyphosate. This is a big pesticide. We didn't start using it until the 80s, and we didn't start doing it in a way where we apply it to the crops to allow them to yield more seeds when we harvest them. Because this is a common practice. This pesticide is used specifically to get more of the grain out of the plant when they're harvesting. And so that's a big deal. That's since the 80s. And we've not really noticed gluten sensitivity issues prior to that. Now also, we didn't start to really hybridize wheat until 1960. So technically, we were using a wheat product very similar to what is used currently in Europe right now. In Europe, the rage is this einkorn wheat, and maybe you've heard it's that rage is kind of here too, to use the einkorn non-hybridized wheat, which is the old school ancient wheat. Now, I still find that folks that have sensitivities can also have sensitivities to the einkorn wheat because once the body notices the reaction, so once the body sees the molecule of wheat and it gets into the bloodstream and we've got some antibodies created to it, it's going to remember it for a while. And this is where I find it most important because a lot of people will think that they can do the whole 30 diet for a month and the body won't be sensitive to wheat anymore. And for some people, yeah, you can calm down inflammation in a month, but most of us, you have to go back to thinking about antibodies and how our immune system reacts to certain things. So for example, if you are exposed to the cold or flu virus, you get that virus in and you respond to it, you create antibodies to it, And those antibodies will last and hang out in your body for a couple of months afterwards. So technically, it's protective because if you still have those antibodies and you're exposed to the flu virus again, you might not get it the second time you're exposed to it because you still have those antibodies floating in your bloodstream. Well, the same thing happens with foods. If we have a leaky gut, and for all intents and purposes, everybody that's been on this earth pretty much probably more than 10 to 20 years of age has a leaky gut. And that's because our food sensitivity, not our food sensitivity, our food system is broken. We have chemicals in our food that irritate our bodies. And gluten and wheat are no different because of this glyphosate. This is a huge chemical. And we have a lot of research. There's a gal from MIT named Dr. Stephanie Seneff. She has a lot of research that's coming out on the connection between glyphosate and gluten sensitivities, autism, things of that nature, many other conditions. But for all intents and purposes, we didn't have this problem with gluten sensitivities until the last 30 to 40 years. So what's happening? Something's going on here. So what is wheat? Because that's one of my other big questions my patients ask me is, what the heck is wheat, not wheat, what the heck is gluten anyway? Well, it is the sticky molecule that is within a wheat kernel. And in particular, gluten is two sticky proteins that are named glutenin and gliadin. So gluten and gliadin, these are two sticky proteins that are what make up gluten. And they essentially keep the flour products bound together. Because if you've ever made a gluten-free type of bread or gluten-free anything, you'll notice it doesn't stick together very well. And that's the beauty of gluten. That's why pastry bakers and bakers around the universe don't really want to try to make gluten-free products is because it's hard. Because gluten really does have a purpose. It helps us to keep things nice and sticky. And so we've got that component. Now, the other side of this is the wheat that actually is the grain that gluten comes from. Now, wheat is pretty much in every processed food. It's hard to get away from it unless something specifically says gluten-free. Even barley malt and syrup has gluten and wheat in it. And that's a problem. Because a lot of folks don't know that. Same thing with soy sauce. General, regular old soy sauce has wheat in it. Tamari is the wheat-free version. However, it's still soybean oil. So, soybean oil, soy sauce, geez, losing it today. So keep that in mind that gluten and wheat, they're in a lot of things. And so I don't want to go and bore you through this whole podcast about all the different things it's in because you probably already know. However, there might be some surprises too. So I popped a little list of that from the celiac.org group at the bottom of my resources. So if you're interested in learning a little bit more about what wheat and gluten are in, take a look at that and look at that in particular because that'll help you out. Now, you'll even notice that I'm having trouble saying wheat and gluten. And so, yes, the two words often get interchanged commonly. And in particular, a lot of patients will ask me, is it a gluten sensitivity or is it a wheat sensitivity? And for me, that's a hard one because some people do, when we look at food sensitivity testing, they will come up with gluten sensitivity, but they won't have a wheat sensitivity. And so that's kind of interesting to me. Now, obviously, because you can't have one without the other, I typically will have people avoiding those for a while. So another big thing that patients notice and ask me about is like, hey, I went out and had pizza and my gut felt off and then my eyes got really puffy the next day. Your eye puffiness, so right underneath your eyes, the darkness and puffiness is a huge indicator as something's not right in the body and especially with digestion. So we'll notice like older folks, right? You're looking at folks who are in their 80s and 90s, and some folks even in their 60s, you'll notice that they start to get bags that are really getting pronounced underneath their eyes. And you might be thinking, what the heck is that? That is a sign that the digestive system and fluid transport system, so the lymphatic system, are compromised. So there's something going on. There's some type of allergic reaction, and there's some type of way that this person is not processing foods properly. Now, of course, as we age, we do slow down in our ability to process foods. And even if you're 30 years old, you are slowing down. You do not have the metabolism you once had. You also don't have all of the enzymes you once had to help you to break down foods. And so it's huge to pay attention to your eyes and underneath your eyes. And if you're getting puffiness under there. And maybe you're not having drastic gut symptoms. Maybe just you see the difference in puffiness. That's important. A lot of people will notice it after a night of drinking, and they'll relate it to being just tired. But unfortunately, drinking is hard on the gut too. And so this is another kind of thing you want to be paying attention to see if your health is optimal. And it's one for me personally that I struggle with all the time, because I do have a lot of sensitivities and I do have a troubled digestive system. That's why I talk about the digestive system a lot, because I am constantly working to try to improve mine, because I just wasn't given genetics that were amazing in the gut department. So that being said, pay attention to your eyes and make a journal. I write down when I notice my eyes are more puffy than others. And gluten isn't the only thing that I'm sensitive to. Corn causes my eyes to puff up like no other. Cashews, nuts, and seeds also cause me issues. And so it's not just the gluten is my point here. And I'll kind of go through that through the rest of this podcast. So another big thing that's trendy right now is you can have sourdough bread if you are gluten intolerant. That's what was posted on some article, and a lot of folks were talking about it. But here's the thing. There's fake sourdough bread and there's real sourdough bread. If you're getting sourdough bread out and it's in a bag and it's been sliced, it's fake sourdough bread. Panera has fake sourdough bread. You know, I'm just, not that I'm hating on Panera. They're actually doing a lot to make changes and make things very healthy for you. So I like Panera's concept, but their sourdough bread is a processed sourdough bread. The old school, you need it to ferment a long time kind of sourdough bread, that's the sourdough bread that folks might be able to digest better if they have trouble with gluten and wheat. And the reason being that way is because the yeast actually consumes a lot of the carbs that are in there, and then you've got a lot of bacteria in that as well. So almost like a yogurt with the bacterial ferments, it helps you to digest it. So basically sourdough bread, when fermented for a long period of time and done the right way, is pre-digested bread for you. And so it makes it easier for your digestive system. That's the same concept as sprouted grains. A lot of people have said to me in practice, well, if I eat sprouted flour or sprouted grains, it's a lot better for me than gluten or wheat when it's just in its regular form. And I do find that to be true. For some people, the sprouted does help, but really what it all boils down to is it's helping, the sprouting is helping you to digest it because it's pre-digested for you. And the same thing goes with legumes, so lentils and other beans. If you buy them sprouted, they're pre-digested for you. And so it's easier for anyone with a digestive deficiency. And ultimately, we're all kind of sitting around with digestive deficiencies if we eat conventional foods. And by that, I mean processed foods. We go out to eat regularly, things of that nature, because like I've said a million times before, the food system's broken. We have a bunch of junk in our food and we're slowly trashing our digestive systems over and over again. So it's important to keep that in mind. Now, another question that I commonly get from my patients is, why do I feel worse when I eat out? Well, that is exactly it. You don't know what these restaurants are making, you know, using to make your food. You don't know what kind of oils, you don't know what kind of processed items they have. You have no idea. And you can ask them. And a lot of restaurants are really great at being conscious and knowing, and other ones are not so great. So it's one of those things. It's kind of like a crapshoot when you go out. And in particular, I'll also have patients ask me, why do I feel worse when I go out and eat and drink alcohol? And that's because alcohol, as lovely and delicious and fun as it is, it's hard on the gut. And when you have alcohol, it's an irritant in and of itself. So that's going to cause your gut lining to be irritated on top of its low-level irritation that it might have. And then now you have more molecules of whatever you ate, whether it was pizza and beer or whether you had hot dogs and beer at the ball game, whatever it may have been, it's going to get across into the bloodstream and you're going to have an immune reaction. And when you feel worse, almost like you have a hangover from eating those things, it's your immune system really trying to fight all those molecules that shouldn't be in the bloodstream. And oftentimes that can last up to 72 hours after you had that particular item. So there's that. Now, I do commonly hear from patients, do you think I have celiac disease? Do you think I have another food sensitivity? Because a lot of people will cut out gluten and wheat. And what they do is they won't eat bread, they won't eat crackers, and they won't eat anything processed that they know in their head, pancakes, things of that nature that have wheat, but they're not looking at the labels of all their sauces and things of that nature. That's one thing. Or like I said with the title of my podcast, don't hate on wheat, because sometimes it's not wheat. It's a combination of things. And sometimes we have to really go back and sleuth it out. And that's why I do recommend food sensitivity testing. And I also recommend the genetic testing too, to kind of see what's going on as well. Plus, if you do have pretty severe digestive systems and digestive system issues, I really do recommend you getting testing, because if your gut lining is being attacked, and by that I mean your body's going to attack its own gut lining, unfortunately, because it's going to go after your immune system is going to, and your white blood cells in particular, are going to go after the enzyme that is produced in your intestinal wall that breaks down gluten. And so unfortunately, this molecule called tissue transglutaminase, that's the enzyme, it will get attacked. And then the gut lining becomes attacked. And then if you've got that enzyme attacked and that gut lining attacked, you one, can't process gluten, and two, you've got damage to your digestive system lining. And this causes a whole host of issues. And in particular, you end up malnourished. You have iron deficiency anemia. You might have low vitamin D. You might end up with osteoporosis from lack of being able to absorb calcium. So these are big issues that can happen with this stupid immune system attacking our gut lining. Now, I say this in joking, because our immune system is very smart. And do not think that I think that our immune system's stupid. It's just crazy how it can overattack. And so overattacking our gut lining and the enzyme that breaks down gluten is just the tip of the iceberg. That starts that a process that can be kicked off into an autoimmune condition. Because once we start to attack our gut lining is our tissue. These are cells that our gut lining is made up of very similar cells that our skin's made out of. And so now we end up with attacks on our skin. And it's really, really critical to kind of put that connection together that, yes, our gut lining has different specialties for helping us to absorb nutrients and things of that nature. But it's really, when you look at the basic form of any of our tissues, they're all the same. They have the same cells. And they have the same mechanism in terms of repair and turnover. So if you have a body that's attacking its own gut lining, now you're also going to have issues with skin. And collagen, our joints, those are also skin. So these are big issues. And that's why a lot of people will have skin issues in conjunction with gut issues, is because unfortunately we have all these leaky gut toxins. So meaning we've got all these different food molecules that are getting into our bloodstream. And if you're eating conventional processed foods that have been basically doused in pesticides, you're going to get all of those molecules in your bloodstream. And your body doesn't know what to do with that, because those are foreign invaders. And so now we just set off a whole issue of cascade of issues throughout the body. And this is huge. This is a big, big issue that a lot of us are dealing with. And I don't think that it's gluten to be blamed for exclusively. Maybe gluten set it off and wheat set it off. But, and you're hearing me say gluten and wheat, because sometimes it's one or the other that someone's sensitive to. But for all intents and purposes, the wheat molecule has gluten in it. And so they're essentially the same thing starting the process. Whether you have a sensitivity to one or the other, it's irrelevant to me. You're going to have to avoid wheat altogether, even if it just says you have a gluten sensitivity. So in practice, I tend to look over people's vices and daily habits, because unfortunately, as humans, we are a lazy bunch of individuals, and we tend to eat the same things over and over again. And if we don't make food at home, we tend to eat out at the same places over and over again, and we eat the same things at those places over and over again. We also tend to have certain vices that we will be on repeat with. So for example, drinking a glass of wine at night, drinking a beer at night, those are some of the things that can compound the situation here. Obviously, we know that unless you're drinking a gluten-free beer, you're going to also have wheat and gluten in your beer. And that's a whole nother compounding factor there. Now, on top of that, a lot of people say, well, why is wine bad? Well, you have to think about, and this is the same thing with beer, you have to also think about, not only is beer gluten and it's got gluten and wheat made as its sources, you also have to think about the fact that what pesticides were used to grow that beer. So those hops in particular, and the wheat on top of it, the grain, the malt. So the barley malt. And that's actually a big question. You have to think about that. Same thing with wine. Wine is actually really, you know, the grapes are really hard to grow. And when you grow the grapes for the wine, you know, there are a lot of things involved. We know most commonly an article came out from California about the high amounts of arsenic used, but that's not the only thing. Glyphosate is also used. A lot of other particular pesticides are used. In particular, I read the 2017 pesticide use for Washington Vineyards catalog, and there was 21 types of pesticides recommended for use in Washington State alone for making, you know, for growing grapes and eventually, you know, making wine. So this is something to really think about. And you can tell how I'm jumbling my words up a little bit here, because obviously they're not growing wine, you know, but I think a lot of us just don't think about the connection between end product and where it came from. And you can tell even with me jumbling my words that it's not something that I commonly think about either, except when I'm sitting in my office and contemplating what's going on with people. If someone has a vice of drinking a glass of wine a night and they're drinking a wine that is not organic, we've got issues. Same thing with beer. And so we're going, okay, is it also the amount of pesticides in these? Another big thing is chocolate. Chocolate is all the rage, but if you're not consuming an organic type of chocolate and you're hitting up something that, yes, has a higher percentage of cacao, so you're being healthy, you're getting your 65% or greater amount of cacao, but you have no idea where those cocoa beans are coming from and what's been applied to them, you could also be committing digestive suicide because you don't know what's going into those things. So that's a big deal, because if you have no idea where your product is grown, what it's being subjected to get to the end product, then we've got issues. And that's really why I wanted to do this podcast today, is because wheat and gluten get hated on so much, but unfortunately we've got a bigger issue than just the wheat. So interestingly enough, wheat was first planted in the U.S. in 1777 as a hobby crop, something fun to do. And now it's turned into, you know, basically our main sustenance in terms of all of our crackers and breads and things of that nature. So wheat's been around since 1777 in the U.S. And we've only now started to really have issues, because if you look back into 1700s, 1800s, early 1900s, we don't have issues with gluten. There's no mention of these types of things, very low level. And it was kind of more one of those things we call in the medical world, a unicorn type of condition, versus now it's all the norm. So that's a big deal. Now, one thing I want folks to kind of think about in terms of the other effects that having issues with the digestive system lining provoke is that we mess with neurotransmitters. We have the majority of our serotonin, so that neurochemical is what we think of as our happy, our calming, our relaxing neurochemical, the one that keeps us in a good mood. The majority of it is in our gut. Over 95% of it is in our gut, not in our brain. And serotonin also has a component of turning on and off in terms of valves, if you want to think of it that way. And if serotonin levels tend to go very, very high in the production, in their production in the gut, you're going to get diarrhea. So let's back up a minute here, and how the heck does that happen? Well, most of the serotonin that's produced in your body, in your gut, is in response to a amino acid called tryptophan. Tryptophan is very, very important in the making of serotonin. However, when you get wheat in, wheat is a good source of tryptophan. It boosts your neurochemical. And commonly, that's why we love comfort food breads and things of that nature, is because they boost our serotonin. However, when the wheat is contaminated with glyphosate, we find that the gut cells go into overdrive and begin producing too much serotonin, which produces diarrhea, brain fog, and other issues. So that being said, if you are someone that eats wheat and gets diarrhea, chances are it's because of a chemical, and glyphosate is Roundup. And like I said before, that's what is used to help to release more of the wheat kernels when they are harvesting. So when the farmers are harvesting wheat. Now, think about this here for a minute. Now, when you don't feel good, when you're kind of just down in the dumps, what do you want to eat? I mean, usually it's chips or bread or something like that, or mac and cheese. A lot of people think of as their comfort food. Just think about your comfort food. I mean, pizza, another comfort food. So there's a reason behind it, because that serotonin level gets boosted. Like you get your pizza and you're like, I feel so good. It's so yummy. I have my pizza. And you can imagine I'm doing a little dance right now because I do love pizza. And you get that and you're like, yes, everything's great. Everything's good. And so until your body gets that switch where all of a sudden it's like, whoa, I'm getting the glyphosate too. Boom. We set off all of the serotonin. So we're like overloaded with it. Now you might be thinking, but wait, if I have a lot of serotonin, I might be feeling really happy. No, if you get too much serotonin, you feel crappy, angry, and downright snappy. So if you're someone that indulges in eating one of your most favorite foods and you're good while you're eating that food, and then like an hour later, you turn into basically this monster and crabby and irritable, guess what? It's probably the glyphosate, and it's probably that reaction with the serotonin. So maybe you get crabby and then all of a sudden you're running to the bathroom, or the next day you've got mad diarrhea. So something to keep in mind, these are connections that a lot of people aren't thinking about. Only thinking about, well, I'm going to avoid gluten because of this, this, and this, but why? And oftentimes when a patient comes into my practice and they tell me they've been avoiding gluten, I say, why? What did you notice? What is your connection? Because sometimes people are avoiding gluten and they have no freaking clue why. And I really want people to know why, because the why is what gets us back to what's wrong in the system. So all that being said, what helps? How can we change this? What can we do to help things out? First things first is I really do like to do testing on folks that are having gut issues. Twofold, stool testing and food sensitivity. The stool testing tells me what's going on in terms of how many gut bugs do you have, what's happening in terms of your breakdown of fat, proteins, and carbs, and it also lets me know how many inflammatory molecules are sitting around, floating around in your bloodstream and in your gut region. Because in response to active irritation, we produce molecules, antibodies in particular, and I want to know that. Because if someone has a ton of those guys floating around, and they've got certain sensitivities, we can go, okay, this is the combination of things we need to avoid. But also, we know that we've got to work on that gut lining, because anytime a gut lining is extremely inflamed, you're not going to grow probiotics. So you could be drinking as much kefir, you can be taking as many probiotics as you freaking want. You're wasting your time. That's the bummer. Because if you don't have that gut lining calmed down, you really got to chill it out. Otherwise, things won't grow on it. It's much like soil that's too acidic. You're not going to be able to grow plants on it. And guess what? In the gut, if your gut lining is too inflamed, you're not going to grow good gut bugs, and you're not going to have a gut lining that allows things to stay in the gut and not pass across and can create to your leaky gut syndrome that you already have going on. So calming the gut lining is huge in my practice. I do that with pretty much almost every patient, maybe because I do see a lot of gut issue patients, but also because we've got a lot of folks who ignore their symptoms and have no idea what's connected to what. And there's this chronic low level feeling ick, but then you also have all these gut and skin issues and super puffy eyes. Well, number one, got to calm that gut lining down. And that's irregardless of my stool and food sensitivity testing, even though I do think that those are important. Oftentimes what will happen if you come see me, it's stool testing, food sensitivity testing, and I'm going to start right out by, okay, let's calm this gut down. Because all of us who have leaky gut, and like I said before, anyone who's pretty much been on this earth, and I'm daring to go even lower, saying 10 years of age at this point, if you've been eating conventional standard American food, you're screwed and you've got leaky gut. That's just the honest to goodness truth. And the main goal that I have in life for a lot of my patients here, and pretty much all of them, is to prevent autoimmune disease. Because that leaky gut, give it 10, 20 years to compound, you're going to get autoimmune stuff. You're also at a higher risk for cancer, because the leaky gut allows viruses to get across, get into the bloodstream, and float wherever they want to go. And I'm a huge proponent of, if our gut's trashed, we're setting ourselves up for really big issues with cancer, quite possibly too. Because if your immune system is active dealing with all the food sensitivities and chemicals going in the body, how is it going to fight off cancer? How's that going to happen? Think about it. So, yeah, got to work on that gut. All right. So, with gut lining inflammation, you're probably also not absorbing nutrients. And so if you're feeling hungry all the time and you're eating and eating and eating, well, it's probably because your gut is trash and you're not getting signals to your brain that says, hey, I had enough food, because you're not having enough nutrients get to your cells like they should. So basically you're over, you know, consuming food and you're undernourished. And I have a podcast that I talk all about that and in great depth. So I'm not going to go into it today, but it could be why the weight gain, it could be why you always feel hungry. It could also be why the puffy eyes, because you're not breaking down your food like you should. Things are inflamed and boom, got lots of leaky gut stuff going on. So the protocol in my office really is to do the testing, like I mentioned before, the stool and food testing, calm the gut lining inflammation. And then I typically take folks off of all types of wheat, even einkorn, because einkorn, yes, it's a wheat molecule. Yes, it's unhybridized, meaning it hasn't been manipulated or crossed with another type of wheat. But for all intents and purposes, if your body's already seen the wheat molecule, it sometimes can react to the einkorn. And yes, there are cases in which people say that they don't notice any issues by consuming einkorn, and that's fine. For all intents and purposes, when folks do tend to, quote, cheat on a gluten-free, wheat-free, and all their other food sensitivity-free diets that I might put them on, I am going to say, like, yeah, if you do cheat, you got to get the einkorn stuff and make whatever you're going to make at home. Do not go out, because I can guarantee that, as far as I know, in my area, no restaurants are using einkorn flour for any of their pastas or any of their breads and things of that nature, which is unfortunate, but that's the way it goes. Because in the food industry, what sells is products that look good and taste good. And I'm not saying that einkorn's bad. It's just that a lot of the pastry flour makers and distributors, they don't know how to use einkorn at this point. So wait a couple of years, maybe we'll get there. But as of right now, the breads and things that look good and taste good are not going to be made from einkorn as of yet. There is a company, though, online, Jovial Foods. It's linked in my resources here, jovialfoods.com. They do have crackers and breads that they've made, and cookies too, and you could buy it online. But as of restaurants, I would be surprised. And maybe you do have a place that's more progressive in your area. Search it out. Let me know about it. I'd love to hear about it. I just know that in my area, I do not have that as of right now. Typically off those items, you know, how long do I have people off of foods? Well, it usually depends. I usually have somewhere between 3 and 6 months for light food sensitivities, and for stronger food sensitivities that come back over a year. The other big component here, in addition to working on healing up the gut lining, one, by avoiding the foods that irritate it, and two, by working on a supplement protocol, which I'll talk about here in a little bit, I do have people make sure that they're considering going organic, stopping all grains, legumes, beans, and things of that nature. And then there's the thing with meat. Something that's grass-fed is fine. But when they say vegetarian fed, that's a joke. That could be like corn flour or something. You know, I'm talking out my rear end right now. It's more like a corn meal. The poultry in the U.S. and even cows and things of that nature, unfortunately, some of them are pasture raised and grass fed. And then at the last minute, they're taken to a feedlot and given a whole bunch of grain to eat to fatten them up. Not cool. So you really need to make sure you know that the product that you're consuming is purely grass-fed and pasture-raised. Same thing goes with eggs, because like I said before, with chickens and poultry, it'll say vegetarian-fed, but that means nothing. It needs to be free-range, pasture-raised for your poultry and for the hens that are going to be laying your eggs, because otherwise those eggs could be the big issue. And that's why I see a lot of sensitivities to eggs too, just so you know, because of oftentimes what those hens in particular are being fed. Another big deal, alcohol. If you are consuming wine on a regular basis, you better find an organic wine to lower the amount of pesticides that you are intaking. Same thing if you have a favorite distilled item, whether it may be vodka or maybe like whiskey, since those seem to be trendy these days, look for an organic distiller. You want that. Same with beer. All of those can help you out in the long run. But if you do have gut issues, avoiding alcohol for a little while to calm down the gut lining is huge. And I really truly believe that it takes about 3 months to calm the gut lining down effectively, especially if we come your testing comes back when you have a whole bunch of inflammation. 3 months minimum. This, you know, whole 30 thing, I think it's great to calm people's inflammation down. And I do recommend doing a whole 30 kind of diet a couple times a year, you know, taking 1 month here and there out of the year to just de-inflame the body. I'm absolutely a huge proponent of it. But when you have something actively going on, you need a little more time to cut down that irritation. For the gut, to reestablish the gut lining, I still use L-glutamine. L-glutamine is an amino acid that helps to link the gut lining cells back together. And typically I'll use anywhere between 3 and 9 grams a day based on how inflamed the gut is. Also, the higher you go with the glutamine is based on how much diarrhea. The more diarrhea you have, the more L-glutamine you're going to need. I also use collagen peptides by Vital Proteins. It's a blue cap and label. It's my favorite product for the collagen. And in particular, I will use both the L-glutamine and the collagen together to help to really get that gut lining back together, because it's going to help to strengthen the cells, and zonulin, which is a protein that links the cells together, much like a mortar puts the tile together in your bathroom if you're into the tiling lingo. So licorice root extract. DGL, so deglycerized type of licorice, I also will use. You could use a chewable form, like one from Integrative Therapeutics, or you could use one that is a capsule, such as a Douglas Labs product or a Gaia Herbs product, where you take the capsule and that capsule of the licorice goes in. And what licorice does is puts a Band-Aid over the new cells so that every little molecule of food that goes by really doesn't scrape up that gut lining. Marshmallow root is another thing that I use. If you don't like the concept of licorice, if you don't want to do chewables, or, you know, you really want to try to have another option, or if you're sensitive to licorice, some people are sensitive to licorice, keep that in mind. I will use marshmallow root. And then after we've got some time in, I will use probiotics, but that gut lining needs at least a month or so of healing before you even try to get some probiotics in to help with breaking down food and really reestablishing your gut microbiome. Because most people who have really inflamed guts, if I give you probiotics right off the bat, you're wasting your money. So keep that in mind. The more inflammation that you have in the gut, the more that you might need something called zinc carnosine. Zinc carnosine is specific to de-inflaming the gut. And I have a product that I love called Zinc Carnosine Pepzin by Integrative Therapeutics. That's my go-to. The other big go-to is aloe. Now, you have to be very particular about the type of aloe that you use. The one I like is something called the Herbal Answer. You can get it online at herbalanswers.com. It is combined with herbs and aloe, and it doesn't provoke diarrhea, because aloe in and of itself can be really acidic and irritating to the gut. So you want to make sure that you have a good type of aloe, and the Herbal Answer is one of my favorites for getting that in, especially if you know someone that has an inflamed gut and has acid reflux types of symptoms and might even have ulcers. And L-glutamine and licorice are great for helping with ulcers too, but you need just a little bit more of a Band-Aid, and that's a big old Band-Aid by putting on the aloe there to help to just cover that gut lining so it calms and really relaxes. So something to add to the protocol there. Now, the puffy eyes component, I want to get back to that, because this means you're not breaking down your food efficiently. And pardon me. Speaking of allergies, the puffy eye thing's a big deal. And it's lymphatic congestion too. So if you have allergies, it's something to really, really pay attention to. And you'll notice flux in the puffiness under your eyes based on what you're eating and how inflamed your gut is. And I like folks to use that as their gauge and really pay attention to it, because it can tell you a ton about what's irritating you, even beyond or why, like beyond the food sensitivity testing, but also even after you've done the food sensitivity testing and you're starting to reincorporate foods, which I think is something that is key. It's good to watch when you reincorporate foods after an avoidance of them for 3 to 6 months. Watch the eyes and see what sets the eyes off, because that might be your only indicator that something's not going right. Also, keep in mind, if you do have puffy eyes, you do want some digestive enzymes, because in the Chinese medicine world, we see that as a inability to break down foods, and so it builds up and the eyes tend to be part of that factor. Now, of course, you also can see that if you're tired, your eyes are going to be puffier too, and the amount of toxins, so alcohol also affects puffiness in the eyes, and that'll give you a really good indicator as to, one, how much alcohol you can tolerate, and two, how much it's affecting your body. So watch those puffy eyes. Now, all this being said, another big thing that I always get asked in my practice is, so I want to eat gluten, it's my birthday, or there's a wedding, or there's a party I want to go to. What the heck can I do to eat gluten and combine it with other lovely, delicious, tainted foods? Well, activated charcoal is the way to go. And typically, after you've consumed this meal that you want to block really from being absorbed, you want to use 2 capsules of activated charcoal. It neutralizes the food by trapping toxins and pretty much everything you eat in that time frame. So keep in mind, you're not going to get any nutrients from that meal, but if it's not a nutrient-dense meal, who cares anyway, right? So my 2 favorite products are Integrative Therapeutics Activated Charcoal or the Bulletproof Company's Coconut Charcoal. Now, where does this charcoal come from? It's not like someone stole it from your barbecue and put it into capsules. It's made from either coconut or bamboo, wood or willow bark. So those guys are the basis for these particular capsules. And in particular, the coconut charcoal from Bulletproof is, I find that coconut just absorbs so much better. And it's kind of one of my favorite ones. The Integrative Therapeutics is a blend, I believe, of coconut and maybe bamboo is the other. I'm not 100% sure on that one, so don't quote me on that one. So when I go out and I'm gonna indulge in something delicious, I usually will get the activated charcoal going. And then when I get home, I'll take 3 grams of L-glutamine. And if it means that I'm not going home right after that, then that night before I go to bed, I will take L-glutamine. Because if you tend to have a reaction in which you're going to get diarrhea after a food that irritates you, the L-glutamine can just get in and help to heal up that gut lining. So if you know you're going to go out and have pizza and wine or pizza and beer, or you're going to do, you know, hot dogs at the ball game with some beers, just put in a little bit of activated charcoal and then take L-glutamine that night to help you out. And that can also be great for just helping to counter the effects of these foods. Now, all that being said, the biggest thing that I never want to cause in my patients is a food eating problem, so a food disorder. Because unfortunately, I do feel like with all of these different restrictions and things of that nature, that I'm limiting folks and creating monsters. And I even seen it in my own self, because if I get a hold of something that's gluten, it's almost like I'm a little like crackhead. I'm like, oh my God, I need more of it. Oh, it's so good. And then of course, then I feel worse after, but it's almost like this weird reaction that my brain has that I'm letting myself have it. That means I can have a ton of it. And so one of the big things in this realm with all of this gluten-free and dairy-free and this and that and the other free is to make sure that you're thinking of this in terms of a protocol and not for life, because, well, that being said, unless you're celiac, then that is for life. But for folks that are more just sensitive, it's about healing up the gut lining, working really hard for a couple of months, then after that, allowing these things to come into the diet. And if you start a protocol and you really do want to have gluten, okay, just get the activated charcoal so you can clean it up afterwards. I don't want people to be restricting so much for so long that it creates a monster, because my worst nightmare would be to have created food issues in anybody. So that being said, take a look at my resources from this episode where I note the sources of gluten. Also, Einkorn, how to cook with it. I've got a resource there as well. The Jovial Foods Company will tell you all about their different flour cookies and breads if you're not into baking things yourself. There's also some history on wheat that I've added and included for your entertainment from the National Association of Wheat Growers. And then I also have 2 articles from Dr. Seneff's interview with Dr. Mercola and Dr. Perlmutter on the connection between glyphosate and wheat. And then I have some lists of organic wine companies, craft distilleries, organic beer, and Equal Exchange Chocolate Company that I like in terms of good chocolate and sound chocolate in terms of not all these pesticides added to the product. Now, all this being said, if you are struggling with gut issues and really want some guidance as to what direction to go, I have created a course on how to fix your digestive system and all the different steps to go about that. And you can find that course on my website under the courses tabs at drjkrausnd.com. So if you're looking for more help, go and check that out, see what you think. Otherwise, I'm also available for private consults online as well and in my office here in Tacoma, Washington. As I know that dealing with gut issues is not easy, and we often do need a little bit of guidance other than just avoiding these foods and creating monsters as time goes on. So, all that being said, take a look at my resources, see what you think. If you have questions or comments, leave them for me. I'd love to hear from you. You've survived another episode of The Health Fix. I'm your host, Dr. Janine Krause. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning into The Health Fix, the podcast all about taking control of your health, rebelling against aging, and having fun every day. A lot of patients ask me, do you think I'm aging too fast? So, I created an evaluation checklist for you to see for yourself. Plus, I created a resource guide to help you slow down the aging process right now. You can find it for free on my website, drjkrausnd.com. If you like this podcast, help get the word out to others by liking it and rating it. If you'd like more natural health tips and want to join our Facebook community where I interact daily, click on the Join Group button on our website at drjkrausnd.com.